Good morning and welcome to Family Life. Your hosts, Sharima Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellence, The Lord Speaks. It's been long for a moment of human name of Allah, the most gracious, the most merciful. I greet the listening audience in the peace of Assalamu Alaikum. This week's discussion on family life today, specifically, we're going to discuss roundtable topics. So these are topics derived from the community. And on today with Dr. Nadia and I is our special guest and friend, Minister Michael Graves. Minister Michael Graves is from the church, Newark Church of Christ. He was baptized into Christ by Dr. Eugene Walton of the Clinton Avenue Congregation in 1997. He later relocated to Atlanta, where he placed membership at the Old National Church of Christ and began pursuing his education at the World Bible Institute in Atlanta, Georgia. He has been preaching the gospel since 2005, encouraging men and women, boys and girls, to come out of midnight darkness and be empowered by Almighty God through the cleansing and power of Jesus Christ. He's active in the ministry at North and like basketball as an AAU coach, teaching young men life skills and biblical applications to life challenges. He is also the co-teacher of the new converts class in the adult Bible class. His goal is to have his own ministry and congregation someday. Welcome back, Brother Mike.
Well, good morning, Salima. Thank you for having me. It's a delight to be here once again.
Yes, you're no stranger to our show. You were back, you were here in September of 2020. And it's so wonderful to have you back.
Oh, excuse me.
Listen,
I'm very excited about today's topic. It's something that a lot of people, if it doesn't directly affect them, it probably will fall under the radar or go unnoticed across America, especially this particular weekend.
Yes, sir. We're talking specifically to the listening audience about the federal eviction moratorium that's about to be released today. Today's the last day. And let me just give a little background about that, Mike. The U.S. Supreme Court declined to lift the CDC eviction moratorium in a 5-4 decision issued on June 29, 2021, leaving the moratorium in place until it ends today, July 31, 2021. Tens of millions of people are more likely to be affected by this moratorium being released. And Mike, here's the thing, and you go right to it, brother. The states have the money, but the people are not getting the money. If you will go ahead and start us today on this subject matter.
All right. Well, what I have learned is that they're giving this relief money to help renters pay their rent. Specifically in New York, they have not released any money to anyone. So that tells me there's something underhand that they ain't done with these funds. If you're not distributing the funds to the people whom the state was given the federal money for. New Jersey's a little bit better, but it is also lacking. And now, from what I have read, now you can no longer get that money at this time. So it's come and gone, and everyone wasn't aware of it. some of it was also that we didn't take advantage of it when it was offered. This weekend, particularly today, I believe, today is the 31st. After today, all evictions will be going. They're already filed in the court. Now you will be called up on them. They're trying to let the landlord and the tenant possibly work out a payment agreement. But if not, nobody can be evicted before January 2022. So they still would have some time. But there's not many people that are putting the payments that you owe on the back end. Most of them want all those months that you have missed that money up front. Most people will not have that money up front. If the federal government does something, you're going to have a massive eviction going across this country, which would raise homelessness to a height it's never seen before. I think that there's currently a bill under the governor's desk to move the end of the moratorium to August 31st. But we're still only talking 30 days. And that's only for those making more than 80% of the county's income. As I look at the charts that they have listed with the data, the county I live in, Essex County, from March of 2020 to April of 2021, in March there was like 2,000 to 2,000 court cases waiting for eviction. The number has gone down to approximately 1,000 in June. But Essex County is a large population, Black, Hispanic, a minority. And this is the largest county that's being hit the most with eviction. So I'm shudder to think what will happen after today. The federal government or the state doesn't discuss these cases, because it's going to be a little difficult to weed out the fraud people from those who actually really need it. But everyone has not gone back to work yet and playing catch up on rent, because in New Jersey, rents are not cheap in Essex County. Playing catch up is going to be hard for anyone with any amount of income. It's going to be difficult. And we already know, as data has shown us, that there's nowhere in the country that you can live on minimum wage. So if there's no way you can live on minimum wage, that tells us that the people who are making more than that are behind, are going to really struggle if the landlords don't bend some. And then my thought is, two things are happening across the Essex County. Every year the landlords go up on the rent. So let's say a landlord goes up $50. So living, you don't get a cost of living raise every September from your job. Eventually, you want to be priced out of your home, because you're not going to be able to keep up with the increases in the rent. And this is something I've been monitoring and watching as well. When I first started at my apartment 4 years ago, it was $900 a month. It has blossomed to $1,184 in a few short years. So as it's gone up $50 every September, I haven't got raises equivalent of that every year. So therefore, there has to be a meeting of the mind somewhere. Otherwise, we're going to have a lot of homeless people.
You made an excellent point, Mr. Mike. You said specifically, you know, you're talking about the increases in rent, and there was a discussion online. I thought it was very poignant that you've addressed some of the issues regarding leaving your home if you're a home owner. You know, we've discussed the foreclosures and so forth. And one of the things that the article depicted was, once you're renting and you have salary increases, say you're one of the ones who are benefiting and have salary increases, then your rent increases as well.
Yeah.
So your cost of living wage doesn't supplement your cost of living. So I think you're making a very important here, important point here. Now let's talk about the moratorium and the process, and this has occurred in many of the states. A declaration was required with the process. So that means you had to literally go into the court and file a declaration that gave you temporary halt to the residential eviction for non-payment of rent. They call that REIS, R-E-I-S, until 7/31/21. Now, you mentioned, Minister Mike, and this is what's going on across the nation. Now it's in the hands of the various states. Once individuals filed that declaration, they were then to file for their phone. And some people filed for the state funding that was granted by the federal government. As you say, like in state of New York, they haven't received any of that federal government. I don't know many states, Arizona starting, it's very few, that have started. And to prevent the fraud, but, you know, a great deal of people did not know this, to prevent the fraud, that declaration had to be made to the courts prior to your applying, you know, kind of it had to coexist. So I found it very interesting that many people, you know, many states were saying, oh, we're concerned about fraud, but yet they were not informing the people what they could do specifically. If you did not go online and do massive research, you really didn't know what to do. And so now we're here, and let's take California, for example. I mean, kids walk on the beaches. There's miles and miles of homeless people, and now what we're getting ready to add to that?
It's a very dire situation. And it's all based on the greed of money. Probably after a certain amount of time, if this money is not used, it'll go elsewhere. And by not informing the people, that's probably what will happen. That's probably what will happen. Like you said, unless somebody, that's why it's important for people to have someone that's not themselves be tech savvy, because if you don't tap into certain things, you'll never find out what's available to you and what's going on.
Yes, and so there are some other things. You know, the CARES Act is really no longer in effect, but the landlord still must use attestation of the plaintiff, so they have to file for the eviction in the time frame in which the law gives them. But if you don't have programs offering people extensions or states offering people extensions, you're talking about children, families being on the streets.
And, you know, there's one thing about the law that I find quite disturbing. It says that if a landlord is taking, well, they're really taking the longest pending cases first, a new case is that, tenants owe more than a year's worth of rent. And the law says that if a landlord doesn't come to court, the case will be dismissed. But if the tenant doesn't come to court, and the court determines the landlord has made their case, the court will enter default judgment to evict the tenant.
Correct.
So if the tenant doesn't show up, he doesn't get a new date or something. They take a determination. But if the landlord doesn't show up, they just dismiss. The balance of fairness is not there. And it's not in the tenant's best interest. The way it's structured, it's not.
It's
very bad.
It's not. And here's another thing that states may not know ahead of time. In different states, it's different. So contact your local state municipality to find out what your specific guidelines are. But here, this is very important. if a landlord seeks to go into default, okay, this is before the court appearance. And I say this to the listening audience, make certain, you know, folks don't know this per se, make certain that your answer is filed back. Because if your answer is not filed back, so take for example, let's use Georgia. I'm sort of familiar with Georgia laws on this. Say in the state of Georgia you receive an answer, I mean, you field a petition of default. You need to answer. There's a mediation process in Georgia that you can qualify for. You know, this is to prolong things and so forth and so on. And so when you, if you do not answer, though, it's an immediate default. It's an immediate judgment for default. So that's, so it's very tricky. And people, there's you know, HUD program, contact these people beforehand, find out what your rights are as an individual, find out if you can seek mediation. But Mike, just like you said, you know, it depends on which state and which cases they're going to work with first.
Yeah, and they're going to start with those that are a year old in the court, or something, some recent ones or something to that effect. It's going to be rough. It's going to be a rough patch days ahead.
Yes, because in Arizona you only get 10 days notice. You know, 10 days, I mean, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, Georgia's rough. I didn't know when I first moved there exactly what was going on, but I left my complex on my way to work one day or something. And I saw all of this furniture and everything on the side out in front of a apartment. And I said, oh, somebody's having a garage sale or something like that. And my friend said, no, they're being evicted. And to see that they would put the people's stuff right on the side.
Sure, yes.
So that anybody that is that the way they have that law, it's more a slavery time law still that they do that.
Such a good point. Now, Dia, are you, Dr. Muhammad, are you familiar with any procedures or, you know, community in your particular area of North Carolina that may be affected by this moratorium release?
Well, I just wanted to add, not in particular, but just from the perspective of a public health practitioner, you know, I just think that this whole moratorium thing, you know, it being lifted, it's like a dual epidemic or a dual crisis. And what I mean by that is that we have homeless people. Many people who experience homelessness usually are often older, right, according to the CDC. This is what they said in the past. And many of these people have underlying medical conditions. And so with that being said, they face even more severe COVID-19, you know, other people. So it's have a dual crisis, so to speak. And so it's a very dispiriting situation, as Minister Michael Graves had pointed out. It's a public health crisis as well. It's just not just people becoming homeless, but they don't have access to adequate health care, and they don't have access to health care in general. So it causes an array of issues. And so from a public health perspective, it's going to get worse. And so I just wanted to add that statement to the overall process of this moratorium. It's a dual crisis, and we need to keep that in mind.
Oh, very important. And then we have this, you know, the various variants that are out. So, you know, the disease itself, COVID-19, has not gone anywhere. It has become worse. So you have a higher viral load that's 4 times to 5 times the viral load of the alpha mode. So, yes, you're adding this back into the public, and this is a nightmare. This is an absolute nightmare. Like the elderly, we're concerned about the elderly and the children. We're concerned about everyone, but yes. So how many more deaths are we going to have that's going to stipulate underlying causes for death, where all of this is preventable.
Exactly.
It's preventable. But since everything is based on money, it's a matter of how much greed does a person want. In my estimation, and I could be wrong, but these vaccinations that came out, it was never about really healing the people. And this is why. This is why. When the first person came out with the vaccine, the other company said, let us produce that same one that you have and get it to the cure. Instead, everybody wanted to get on the money wagon, so they treated the vaccinations like they do the cell phones. Well, now you got AT&T, you got Verizon, so that everybody can get a cut of the pie. So rather than produce it the same, or all these companies could have produced, they got it randomly out to the people. Instead, everybody held back to get their own brand out so that they could cash in on
it. I think you're making a good point. The pharmaceutical companies have profited to date over $6 billion. And now with the new variant, this stipulating because of the efficacy of the initial gene therapies, they're suggesting a third inoculation. Of course, that has not been approved yet, but this is what they're suggesting. And in the future, to a listening audience, we're going to have the scientists on to speak specifically about this. But for today's discussion, I'm just going to give a generic overview as to the importance of knowing that clearly, right now, there is no cure for this particular virus. And to follow general guidelines that you think, not only, I mean, some common sense, but use a little common sense, you know, to protect yourself, not go, they did this, I have to discuss this, they did this study, I read this article yesterday, and they're saying, and Dr. Muhammad, jump in any time, but I'm going to say, take a few minutes to say this. They're starting to conduct studies on the breakthrough cases. And they're saying, okay, they're rare. Now they're saying, we're seeing a significant increase in breakthrough cases. What that refers to are individuals who are double vaccinated. And so they interviewed folks. It said, this is not a laughing matter, but we were talking, I'm giving an example of the common sense. So they interviewed a series of folks and said, okay, you know, contracted, not only have you contracted COVID-19, some of them contracted the variant, some of them were very, very ill. And they said, okay, so what were your behaviors? And many of them said they attended weddings that were 150 people plus up to 300 or 400 people. How in the world can we have a wedding today with 300 or 400 people and we have a virus? Okay? The others said they were on vacation in Vegas and other hotspot areas of the country, Florida, and this is how they contracted the disease. Dr. Muhammad, if you can jump in, just basic measures of which we can follow safety precautions.
Yeah, I just wanted to take it a step back a little bit, though. When you talk about people attending large events such as weddings and different sporting events, and remember, many of these people have been misled, and they've been misguided. And as you notice with the CDC, they keep changing their recommendations. I mean, they're trying, but they evolve and change over time. When the pandemic initially rolled out, we were told, don't wear a mask. But that was misguidance at the time, right? Because 2 or 3 months later, we were all being told to implement social distancing and to wear a mask. Well, the same thing happened with vaccination rollout. Once the vaccinations were rolled out, people were told, you know, they were safe, they were effective, and you could unmask. But now the recommendations have been stated and changed again. Now we're being told to make sure you wear a mask at all times now in indoor venues. So who knows what the recommendation is going to be next week? So you do have to use time for this. You do have to start reading and exploring and make sure and ensure that you stay safe as much as you can. Because believe it or not, this pandemic is still being collected. And so, and when you think about it even on a more granular level, you think about the pharmaceutical companies that have been vetted to make this vaccination. You think about a place like, you think about Pfizer. Pfizer traditionally doesn't make vaccines, right? They don't make Moderna. They don't traditionally make vaccines. Places like Merck Pharmaceuticals, Johnson & Johnson. In fact, Johnson & Johnson really is the only pharmaceutical that actually made a true vaccine. Everything else is what gene therapy, right? Pfizer produced a genetic therapy type. It's not even a vaccine, so I can't call it a vaccine. But messenger RNA technology. And then the same with Pfizer. So when you have companies like this who are just new in the sandbox of making vaccinations, the research is still very new, folding, and so expect changes for use from common sense, right, at this point. Because the experts are still learning, and information is still unfolding. So that would be my take, just on the whole.
Okay. And I think you made an important point to go back, and the people being misled, and to the listening audience, what Dr. Muhammad is essentially saying is, you know, so we're going to use Johnson & Johnson, and then we're going to talk about, you know, Johnson & Johnson, their strain uses a live virus, okay? Whereas Pfizer and Moderna, the mRNA, this is synthetic. So as the research is unfolded, this is going to have certain effects on the human body that's still unfolding. You don't know.
Yes.
And from week to week, we're getting sometimes misinformation, no information at all, misleading information. So we must be vigilant. And, you know, understanding and reading what we can. And just, as you said, Dr. Muhammad, practicing basic common sense, just doing the best that we can do based on the information we have.
Yes. I would say continue to stay in your chambers. You do have to live, but just use a little common sense. Because common sense will take you a long way. We do what we can, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
You know, it's been said, common sense is not too common.
You know, Mike,
this keeps evolving, and we have to change with the evolvement. And this is the greatest information age ever. And so there's really no excuse to be ignorant about a topic. It really is.
I know, because some of the scientists and I stay on these outlets, and alternative outlets, and there was one that was very interesting where the scientists were discussing, you know, first of all, people under the, oh, I'm sorry, Mike, did you want to proceed?
Oh, yeah, I'm just saying that I didn't know. That's not an excuse today. This is the greatest information age ever. Anything you want to practically know, you can hit Google and it'll get to you. So, you know, some things about people being misinformed is not really an excuse acceptable today.
Yes. And what I was going to say, you know, to piggyback having the understanding, I go to a great deal of alternative sites that feature many scientists studying this, like Dr. Muhammad explained, everything is still being discovered. One of the things that was interesting that came up, you know, that people are not consciously aware of, but the information is out there, is that the so-called vaccines today are technically not approved by the FDA. And why isn't that approved by the FDA? Because the efficacy standards cannot be met in a matter of an emergency output, okay? So the vaccines are technically gene therapies because they use mRNA. Another thing that they did not know that I found very interesting that they found out now that affects people differently. When the inoculation takes place, the jab was initially thought to stay in the area of inoculation, so we're going to say the arm, you know, for this discussion. But they're finding out that the inoculation travels throughout the entire body. And this is causing certain effects on certain people. Also, the initial studies before output were done solely on men. So various ethnicities and women were not included in those studies. And currently, adverse events are experienced most by women between 64% and 95% of women have adverse effects. And we're not saying that it doesn't work for some people. There is some efficacy for some people. It just depends that when you're doing a clinical trial or a study, if Dr. Muhammad jumped in here on here, what is that average time for clinical studies on various trial drugs and or vaccinations?
When you think about vaccinations in general, there's usually a 7 to 10 year period before a vaccination is approved. It takes quite a bit longer than just a compound. And so you have to go through the preclinical phase, then you go through the healthy patient phase, and then you go into the sick patient phase, right, the population, and then that will be the phase 3 trial. So vaccines typically take 7 to 10 years. And to determine any type of safety or any product, be it vaccination or compound, the average time is 2 years to evaluate safety and efficacy data. And so what they're doing with Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, they're approving these, well, not approving, they're granting emergency use authorization and record-breaking, net-breaking time, speed time, which is what 4 months, almost maybe. You know, and now they're saying with the Pfizer vaccination after 4 months, the efficacy rate is only at 83%. It's all right. It's all not bad. It's not above 90. So it's concerning.
Absolutely. To the listening audience, this program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent. Marad speaks. Talk about another public health issue. And that is, and before we go on, Minister Graves, do you have any other commentary on the evictions and the moratorium that you want to address?
Not really, but I would suggest that people who are facing or the behind in their interest or something like that, that they seek their government agencies to find out what is available to them and be talked about it.
Very good guidance. Another public health issue that we're going to discuss this morning centers around adult oral health. The lack of proper adult oral health leads to higher risk of disease. If you don't take care of your teeth, there's a proclivity for your blood sugar levels to rise So that's your A1C. This can serve as a trigger, potentially leading to diabetes. If you have an infection in your mouth or gums, the bacteria may carry to your lungs or your heart. So good oral hygiene is a great way to reduce the risk of disease generically. Dr. Muhammad, if you can expound on this.
Yes, I just wanted to share an experience that I have. I'm no oral surgeon, I'm no dentist. That is not my area of expertise. However, oral health is very important in subject matter in the area of public health. And when we talk about adult oral health, I always have to circle back to children's oral health. And, you know, just, you know, habits in general when you think about it. Developing good habits begin really early in life. That's something that has to start in the home, right? So that has to begin in the home. And our homes are so broken as a community in general, you know. And so we live in an underserved population where we don't have access to good dental care as well as health care. So I just wanted to, you know, express one experience that I just had recently. And, I thought that I was personal to dentist once a year. I usually go for a cleaning once a year. I usually go get x-rays if something is going on with my teeth. Now, the one thing that I did is over the last past 5 years, I had some type of ringing in my ear. It was ringing. I'm like, what is going on, you know? And so I went to an ENT. In fact, I went to 5 ENTs. I had my eyes done within the last past 10 years, and no one could figure it out. Lo and behold, I went to the dentist, and it looks as if I had a cavity. Couldn't tell, you know, superficially everything looked fine. And had any type of problems with my teeth, other than any type of pain. Lo and behold, I get a filling done the cavity is deeper than it was originally a couple of years ago because, of course, I'm a procrastinator. I don't like going to the dentist like most people don't. And come to find out, once the filling was removed and the cavity was filled, lo and behold, no more ringing in the ear. And it's been a beautiful experience just to be able to hear the birds chirp and just to be able to hear the, you know, the beautiful dryer running in the background. It's out of my cleaning room in my home. Just the small things in life, you know, without having a persistent ringing in the ear, which could be quite annoying. And so that's just my little story, but I know there are other people who have many more stories clean. And, you know, they develop bacteria, pathogens, you know, that stuff is transported into the bloodstream. Some people end up developing a condition in the heart called endocarditis, which is the bacteria and inflammation of the heart. And so these things are important to make sure you develop early, your good habits at an early age, be it whether you have children or whether you have grandchildren. You know, you really need to, we really as a people and as a community need to focus on our health, especially our oral health. And that's something that we don't think about on a day-to-day basis. And so I just wanted to bring the subject and broach the subject because it's something that we don't talk about. It's very disproportionately affected in our communities. And we need to create, you know, some type of platform where we can help children access dental care. And so I think it's a conversation that's needed. I think it's one that needs to continue, and I just wanted to broach the subject just briefly on your show, on the show, so that we can have more conversations like this.
It's so important because periodontitis disease, you know, is rising, and this is the disease of the gums. And in the elderly specifically, you know, when there are oral complications, you know, the nutrition value becomes compromised. Such as endocarditis, that's the infection of the inner lining of the heart chambers.
Right.
There's other types of cardiovascular diseases. There's pregnancy and birth complications. There's actually pneumonia. Certain bacteria in your mouth can cause pneumonia and other respiratory disease. So this is important even in the times that we're living in. And this information can be found under the Mayo Clinic diabetes, we touched that. Osteoporosis, the form of arthritis or the weakening of the bones, all caused by the lack of proper oral health. And Alzheimer's disease has been known to also be progressively worsened as a result of improper oral health. So these things are very important, Doctor. Thank you for bringing that to our attention today.
Well, and then another one that I wanted to add about just trying it real quick, just taking care of the mentally ill. You know, sometimes people who are mentally ill, they smoke quite a bit, not just mentally ill people, but just in general, smoke quite a bit, and they have all the plaque on their teeth and, that, you know, bacteria drains into the blood system, and especially in the ears, which, you know, believe it or not, oral health can lead to hearing loss. But what happens is that blood, is that bacteria or virus is transmitted into the bloodstream of the ear, in the ear, which causes inflammation in the ear, which leads to hearing loss. I mean, not hearing loss, hearing loss. Bacteria, blood vessels in the brain also can be filled with bacteria, causing inflammation and other neurological deficiencies. So we really, as a people, need to really focus on health care needs, unmet health needs of oral care, because it's a small thing, it can lead to bigger things. So thank you, Sister Selena, for additional information.
The need for that is very important. A lot of people get that in their youth where they go for regular checkups and things like that. For the most part, though, dental care is kind of like an auto repair, like an auto mechanic. You only go to him when you need him, otherwise you don't go. That's what people do with their teeth. Unless it's hurting and there's some dire need, they don't go. But the thing about bad dental care is this, there's a saying about teeth. Ignore them and they'll go away.
Minister Mike, if you would be so kind to honor us, because you're very involved in the community. Dr. Muhammad mentioned something earlier that's just staying with me for a few minutes. This show is entitled Family Life, and Family Life for a reason, because if we don't begin to foster nurturing to our families again, as a society, we're going to, not just in this country, but in the world, we're going to continue to decline. If you can give some encouraging spiritual advice. And one of the things, the direction I would like for you to go in, Minister Mike, is the consistency of behavior that supports the enrichment and the nourishment of families. If you can touch on that from a spiritual perspective with our listening audience, I would be so humbled.
It's funny that you should mention that. What I want to say is that in the Bible, Paul said that the indication of last days, these tsunamis, it's not the earthquakes. What is the sign of the beginning of the end is that moral decline in society.
Well,
the beginning. When we look at other civilizations in biblical times, the thing that brought them all down was started with moral decline. When you look at Rome and how Caesar is enacted and so on and so forth, it's very important for us to take that nucleus a family Creator wanted it to be. All things stem from the family. If you have bad communities, you may have bad families. If you want your communities to be better, the families have to be strengthened. We can't have a great congregation unless the families are together. Families are at odds, our congregation will not get stronger. So everything flows from the home. Everything flows from the home. The child's behavior, the adult's behavior, it flows from the home. What the child sees and is taught in the home is what he will reflect out in public. And so most of our societal problems begin in the home. If we get our nucleus of the home back in order, things will fare well for us. One of the enemy's biggest goals, if I can destroy the family, these people will go astray. And that is what we see happening today. So it's very important for parents to nurture their children in the admonition of the Lord. The Bible says to train up a child in the way to go, and later in years he won't part from it. Child is going to grow older, make his own decisions, and form his own way of thinking. But we all must lay a foundation. The foundation is what you always come back to. It's no wonder that when certain things go wrong, even when we're adults and we're out on our own, but we always have a sense of returning home when things go wrong to some degree. That's where the foundation has been laid. And so what I try to do with young men who are in single-parent homes is I try to not only teach basketball, things that will take them further in life than a basketball will. And if I can implant them skills, that mindset in young men, if I can change their mind, I can change his whole life.
It's very, very powerful, Minister.
Thank you.
Very powerful.
Yes, sir. And I think what you start off with, you know, people look at the tsunamis, the earthquakes, the various natural disasters. But you referred to scripture and said, look at this closely. We get in trouble when there is moral decline. How challenging, Minister Mike, is that for our youth today?
Moral decline is very troubling when two parents would tell an 8-year-old boy that he's a girl and start to dress him like one. That's moral decline. And if you speak out and get it against it, someone will say, oh, why don't you get with the times? Well, I'm sorry to say, but there's certain things that are right and there's certain things that are wrong. I was taught that in the 60s. That will never change. The Bible instructs me as to what is right and what is wrong. I truly believe it. That will never change. So when people say to me, probably heard the phrase, that God bless America. When people say that to me, I say, if you really want God to bless America, stop legalizing sin.
Come on now.
Yeah, so when parents are not correcting behavior that is deviant, then the child will say they condone what they're doing. And there's certain deviant behavior all around our children. And when they ask them to a parent about it, the thing is not, the worst word in the dictionary is tolerance. Because instead of saying something is wrong because it's wrong, we tolerate it. We tolerate it. And that word tolerance is just terrible in the English language for that reason. Because people won't say it's wrong, let it be tolerated. Some things are just wrong and not to be tolerated. That's why criminal behavior is not to be tolerated, it is to be punished. Some things are not to be tolerated. They are to be condemned. They are to be told that they're wrong. You know. So it's something that they have all these influences around us. The new media doesn't help, because the things I've seen on television I thought I'd never see. And so the enemy has an agenda as well. And he is certainly seeing that his agenda is being circulated well.
I want to comment on two things. The, you know, the eight-year-old, you know, the eight-year-old wanting to be a transgender. The eight-year-old, we're talking about an eight-year-old. I read an article, and it was so profound. The author was a psychiatrist. And he, too, at one point, wanted to change his gender. And he said, parents. It is insanity to allow surgery to begin on an eight-year-old.
Indeed.
There's been some type of trauma. Let's get into counseling, talk about that trauma. Let that child go on its natural course. And by the time that child becomes an adult, that child may. He said, you know, certain examples certainly preclude other examples. But he was saying, generically, they'll have a better understanding about themselves and be ready to move forward as themselves. But he was condemning surgery, sex change surgery, to happen as early as 8 years old. And when you brought up that age, I said, gosh, I have to follow up with Mr. Grace, because he's bringing up a very important point. The other point you brought up, Dr. Nadia and I can relate to, as we were growing up, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, may Allah be pleased with him, talked about that television as the one-eyed monster. Why? Because it suggests subliminally who we should be, what our culture should be. It's not a reality. So as we try to live the fantasy, we run into moral decline issues because someone is dictating, other than the Creator himself, who we should be. Final thoughts, Minister Graves, and then Dr. Nadias.
Well, my final thought is this. We all have a circle of friends that we travel with, acquaintances that we travel with. And one of two things has happened. Either they're influencing you or you're influencing them. And so if you're being led by God, you should be influencing them more than they influence you.
Beautiful. Powerful. I just wanted to add that, you know, we're in some very, very dangerous times right now. So let's just continue to watch as well as pray. Both. It's very important. It's a very great time that we're living in. But it will get better. Do not give up on life. Do not give up on hope. And always keep your God close to you, because he will never, I'm telling you, never let you down.
Amen.
Amen. If you would tell people how they can reach you, Minister Grace.
My personal email you can reach me at is Michael Graves, the number 5, the number 2, at msn.com. If you go to Michael Graves, you can listen to some of my sermon tips there, or you can reach me there as well.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Dr. Nadia Mohammed, if you can tell the listening audience how to contact you, should they want to reach out?
Yes, you can reach me as well on my personal email. It's extremely long, but however, it is my first. It's my first name, Nadia. Sounds like Nadia. Girl, not like Nadia. Mohammed, Muhammad12@yahoo.com. One word, Nadia Muhammad 12@yahoo.com.
And if you would like to reach me, it is SALIMAHMOH77@gmail.com. We thank you for joining us today to the listening audience. Dr. Muhammad, as always.
Awesome.
It's a great pleasure.
We are going to have you. Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Gray,
we want to invite you back. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me today. I'm always thrilled when I get the call from you. I'm always thrilled and honored at the same time. So thank you so much, Dr. Muhammad. Thank you for being here as well. I love your input today. I was very informative, and may we both continue to do what it is that we do to try to help people be better.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Grace. I appreciate all that you do.
It's so beautiful. That's what we're trying to do here with this radio show. And, again, sponsored by New Africa, XM Olasbi, trying to reach out to the families and getting people information that they can go out and seek. To the listening audience, thank you. May Allah protect you and all those who are experiencing challenges, maybe COVID-19, disease, broken families. But we're going to do like our guest said today. Even though we're living in perilous times, we're going to have that faith. And remember, the Creator says we only require to have the faith of a mustard seed. I leave you with that today. Thank you for joining us. Have a wonderful weekend, and we will be back next week on Family Life. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wow.